Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Airway First, the podcast from the Children's Airway First Foundation. I'm your host, Rebecca St. James. My guest today is Mallory Roberts, a speech pathologist who is trained in cranial sacral therapy, myofunctional therapy, and infant massage. She has special interests in infant reflux, infant oral development, and bottle feeding. Through her professional work and due to the lack of support during her own baby's feeding journeys, she created The Feeding Mom. It's here that she empowers parents through their feeding journeys locally and around the world. Her philosophy is every parent deserves to love feeding their baby. You can find out more about Mallory at thefeedingmom.com or on Instagram at infant.feeding.specialist. And now let's jump into today's episode with our guest, Mallory Roberts. Awesome. Good morning, Mallory. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Yes. Hello. How are you?
I am doing awesome.
Good.
So I found you because I'm in love with your Instagram page.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes because there's tons of great information out there for moms. Too much for us to cover, really. But for today, I want to dig in and really just focus on the mouth. So let's start off with, why is it so important for new moms to get in their child's mouth? And what is oral mapping? And what's the proper way to do it?
Yeah, it's such a weird concept. And a lot of times parents are like, that's a little strange, right? When we look at the mouth, and really, I am all for all human beings getting in their mouths. I really push the adults of the parents I work with, like, to get in their mouth, right? And they can start to feel the differences in their body, which then in turn really changes their sort of mindset, how they feel about getting in their own child's mouth. But for a baby who is carrying tension, and we have that word, right, or tightness, or has a restriction, or isn't using their mouth optimally, getting in there is just, it's like any kind of support we give these babies for head control. It's like the support we give them to sit and to roll, and we're constantly moving their body to facilitate those movements, right? And so when we look at the mouth, if you just take off any kind of weirdness that you feel about it and look at it from a muscle perspective, right? The tongue is such a big, great muscle. And it's important for not just feeding, but for breathing and for digestion and to regulate the body. And we can facilitate that muscle. The oral play that we encourage, right, is to engage the muscles to move and to release any tension that they might be feeling in order to function properly. And to expand that, right, when the tongue isn't doing what it should be, which is sitting on the palate, shaping the face, regulating the system, the baby's brain connection to that space is limited. And when we're talking about oral mapping, getting in the mouth and building those connections, helping baby build those connections is important when we start to look at eating. And not just when you're starting solids, but there's lots of babies who will gag on pacifiers, gag on bottles. And that is because that brain connection, they're missing pieces in that space. And getting in the mouth can help build safety within that space.
And that gag reflex, does that also... is it the same for adults? Because that mapping's just not there? Or is that a different...
Yeah, so I would say it's different. Okay. Interesting. It could be depending on what activity you're trying to do, right? Like if somebody's... So for adults, we're very cognitive, okay? Mm-hmm. Babies are more reflexive, right? And so right now you could think of something really gross, something that you can't stand, and you could make yourself gag, right?
Because it's
not just a physical thing. It's emotional too.
I'm thinking about brushing your teeth or when we go to the dentist, some of us
gag. So when we look at things like that, right? Is it because of your perceived notion of the activity itself? Like some people just don't like the dentist, right? Or Is it because your body is carrying tension in the back of the tongue and your brain connection lacks awareness of that space and doesn't feel safe, right? So even for adults, if you struggle with brushing your teeth as an adult, or if your child struggles brushing their teeth because they're just excessively gagging, we have to look at why, because that gagging is physical, but it's also psychological, yeah? And so do you not feel safe in that space? Is your gag reflex hypersensitive because of that?
Then it's such a huge, though, this is a, you've touched on it. And again, I encourage people to go to your Instagram page. But before we move away from this topic, you mentioned the brain connection. I don't think we talk about that enough. And I think yeah. it's really important for parents to hear. No one told us, you don't think about it.
Yeah.
One of the best ways you can help your child's cognitive development is having that tongue in the roof of their mouth and having a good airway sleep pattern.
Yes. I mean, not just brain connection for awareness, right? Because if there's a part of your body that doesn't get touched, right? Like that's anywhere in your body and doesn't get moved and doesn't get a lot of input, any new touch to that area is going to be sensitive, right? Like your sure. brain's like, whoa.
What yeah, what's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And so if your tongue is sitting low in the mouth and that palate is always wide open and it's never getting any kind of input, if you're going into space that never gets input, then your brain is going, that's a defense mechanism. Gagging is for safety, right? And we need to help create that safety in the body, but also, right, like turning the brain down. Because that's what the tongue is doing when it's on the palate, is bringing it into the parasympathetic nervous system. And then, so if you're never there and your brain is always on, gosh, that's exhausting for your body. And you can't function if your brain is constant. That's not going without sleep. And that's when we go into what's the quality of sleep versus the quantity of sleep, right?
And if you're constantly in that fight, flight, and you're not sleeping,
yeah.
and we're getting into things like ADHD and other behavioral issues.
Yeah.
It's really just a can of worms that
yes,
I don't think people, from the outside world, you don't put them all together.
Yeah, no, right. We're always separating. Like everything is its own thing, right? And that's
right.
Like the body is all.
That's not how the body works. Yeah.
Correct. No.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about breastfeeding, because this is a huge topic. And before we dig into this, I just want to caveat it with, if you're a mom that wasn't able to breastfeed and your child is older, like mine, go ahead and take your mom guilt and let's put it to the side as we continue this conversation.
For sure.
I wasn't able to. Had I known then what I know now, probably could have.
Yeah.
But so we know breastfeeding is important for a plethora of reasons. It's just,
yes.
If you can, it's great. You actually discussed some optimal bottle feeding techniques. So when it comes to bottle feeding, what bottles and nipples do you most recommend? And what are some of the techniques you recommend?
Yeah, this is a big hill that I stand on because we all get it. Breastfeeding is great. And I do both. I breast and bottle feed my babies. So this is not a debate whether breast and which is better, breast or bottle. Yeah. But we right. can't continue like the rhetoric that all babies who bottle feed are going to have these oral motor deficits like that.
Right.
Like we need to move past that and start supporting better oral motor development for these babies. And so when we're looking at bottles, you can just ignore anything the box says because bottles are not regulated and a company can say whatever they want about their bottle. Nobody checks into that. Nobody says, oh, this advertising is 100% accurate, right? So all the boxes that say most like breastfeed, we're ignoring that because it's probably okay. not true.
Just marketing.
Yes, it's just marketing. And the fact is that there is no bottle, not a single bottle, that will ever mimic a breast is tissue. You can't do it. It's not going to happen. It functions in a completely different way than a mechanical device, right? But what we're looking at is how we're feeding baby. Are we being responsive feeders with the bottle? because traditionally we put baby in a cradle hold and the bottle pops in and they're just guzzling down, right? But when we look at responsive feeding, we're taking that away from the baby. We're waiting until the bottle is empty. We're not listening to their cues. We're not even paying attention to it. So outside of the bottle, how we're feeding baby matters. When you're looking at the bottle itself, I have some because I have some of the bottles. We want a sloping shape. Okay. So
instead of the one that's kind of that curved in and then pops up.
Yes. Okay. So then you have, let me see if I have some around here. So this is a Mayum bottle, which everyone mm-hmm. knows, and it's the flat nipple. Okay. Now I also tell moms, it is not, if your baby drinks out of a sloping nipple, it doesn't mean there's not going to have any motor deficits. And if your baby drinks out of a Mayum, it doesn't mean that they will have deficits, but it does tell us something about the body. Because if your baby cannot drink out of this kind of nipple, but they can, this one, it tells us that they're having trouble with latching, okay? Because the nipple is flat. They don't have right. to latch around the nipple. They just rest on the tongue and then they munch on it, okay? So your baby did wonderful on the Mayum bottle. That's great. I'm never going to tell you stop giving them the Mayum, right? Because our number one goal is baby be fed. But I do want to encourage that we're looking at the big picture. If we're not interested in changing feeding, what else is going on in their mouth? Are they breathing with it closed and nasal breathing properly like that? We need to mark that off. Are they sleeping? Do they wake up well rested? Or are they waking up cranky, tired, and mad? Then we're looking at quality versus quantity, right, of sleep.
All right.
So there's other things that we can look at. But the other popular nipple, which is, it's going to be like your standard wide neck nipple. So it's going to come up and then it's going to shoot up, right? Okay. So your traditional wide, it's going to look like this, right? So it's got a big base and then it comes up into a nipple, right? Mm-hmm. And when we talk about like most breasts, like we don't want your, when you're breastfeeding, we don't want lips of like a smashed nipple, right? And the Nook bottles look like a lipstick nipple. Well, we don't want that when we're breastfeeding. So it's just so strange. Anyway. So this is like your traditional wide neck, right? And so there's 20 different bottles now that look like this in some way, shape, or form. And what this does is really creates a narrow latch, okay? So baby is not widening their mouth on this piece, which is what we're wanting. You're wanting a deep, wide latch. But they're not getting to this piece. What happens when they get to this piece is they push up against it, right? Mm-hmm. So their lips go on top of that wide piece instead of really flaring out. And so now we have a really shallow, kind of narrow latch. And how hard is that to drink from, right?
Right.
The other thing that could happen with these wide bottles is that they latch on. And if they do get a wide piece, but look at all that air that's in between the latches, right? So you're latched here and then you're latched here. And we have this middle hunk of air just pulling in air. So... Yeah. When we're looking
at a whole other issue.
Yeah. So sloping, your sloping nipples are even flow balance, pigeon, Lancinot, and they have a couple of others, but they'll all look like this. The other thing that helps with feeding is like the texture of the nipple. Okay. You can see this is very elastic and this would be considered more breast-like. However, what I find is that because this mimics the outside of the breast. There's nothing inside that's mimicking the breast tissue, right? So when baby is pulling on this, I find that babies kind of struggle with the softer ones because when they're pulling, there's nothing for them to push up against. Then it almost flattens and then they're pulling against it.
Okay.
So while we want a good wide shape to help latch, right, for the tongue to cup, for the palate to be nice and wide and not narrow against something, when we're looking at the texture, I want it to be a bit firmer, because that firmness, while they have a nice pretty latch, that firmness gets them something to push up against, if that makes sense.
Yep. So they're actually, that would make them work their jaw more. right? Which yeah, is what I mean, we want.
Yes, we want them pulling, right? And while this is, it looks nice in yeah. action, it kind of defeats still the purpose. Yeah, it's missing something. Now, a lot of babies do well on this, and there's benefits to this kind of bottle because you are getting that shape that you like. And maybe a baby who is low tone might do a little better on something that doesn't need as much input in order to suck, right? So you're kind of looking at, again, at baby holistically versus just like, this is the one bottle that every baby needs to use. Even Flow Balance is still my favorite bottle ever.
Okay.
So, and I've tried a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And so if we're using the bottle, how can we prevent overfeeding?
So we have to look at position, right? Because that matters, because you're going to miss baby's fullness cues. If we're in cradle and we have the bottle down, sure. Baby's in the crook of your arm, you're missing their cues. And a lot of times parents are missing their cues because they're so worried about baby finishing their bottle.
Right.
If we want
especially if it's your first baby, right? Because it says they need this much every time. Yes. You're just going by that list. Yeah.
Even the cans of formula say 0 to 1 month should be drinking that.
Yeah.
Like from birth to
it's
1 month.
God.
It's so frustrating though. And to be like a new mom and like you read the can and you're like, well, my 1 day old isn't eating like this. Well, your 2 day old is not going to be eating what a 1 month old eats. Such a big jump. It's so crazy to me. So first, like, we need to understand that finishing the bottle is not the goal. Yeah.
Right.
Like, we always have an idea about where we kind of want to sit with ounces, but finishing the bottle isn't the goal. And a lot of times we're missing baby's cues because we're paying attention to how much of the milk is left. And so yeah, if your baby is in cradle, let me grab my baby. This is Carl.
Oh. Carl is beautiful. Good morning, Carl.
If you're here, like in our traditional cradle position, like baby has really limited movement and you have a bottle pressed up against their mouth, right? Like they're not going anywhere. And so if they wanted to turn away to say, hey, I'm full,
they can't.
We're not seeing that. Yeah. So we want baby to be in a sideline position.
Okay.
This goes for forever. This is not a medical position. This is not a position that you use when they're young and learning. We always want them in this position, however you want to do it, okay? So parents can have them on their legs out like this. They can put a pillow on the sofa and feed them. They can lean up against them like this, okay?
Those little boppy pillows.
So they're like elevated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And they're on their side lying, right?
Right.
And as they get older, they'll end up sitting up. Yeah. And then you're just sitting them up and eating. Okay.
Right. But they would have movement at that point.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And the bottle is always horizontal. We're always horizontal, right? This should be a 90 degree angle.
Okay.
And so this would be fine as they get older. I don't like the sitting up position when they're young because we don't have this core strength. And so then they end up like this, right?
Right.
And that is so much pressure on that esophagus. So when we're talking about reflux and discomfort during feeding, I mean, that's like you wearing a tight pair of pants the Thanksgiving, right? And you just got to open it up when you leave. So for overfeeding, right? Like to get all the way back, we go in a big circle. For overfeeding, we need to have baby able to tell us their fullness cues. And we need, so them turning away, right? Them slowing down. A lot of times when they're here too, we don't even notice the slowing down because they have to keep sucking because the milk is just coming, right? Whether they want it or not. We're missing those two big ones. And then stop paying attention to the ounces. Now, of course, we want baby eating. But if they're stopping and they're showing you that we need to stop the feed and they're not getting what they need to based on them not growing on their own curve, right? If you are born in the 30th percentile, it's totally fine for you to stay in the 30th percentile. You don't need, it's not a test score. We don't need to be all 100.
Right. And you don't compare them to what the 90s is eating and doing.
It's correct.
Completely different.
It's completely different. And so if your baby is really lethargic or they're not having a lot of pee and poop diapers, if they're truly not getting enough, but they're telling us they're done, that is, we need a feeding assessment. That's telling us something's going on and we need somebody to look at it, not that we need to push ounces. That's not the solution. Because then we have a baby.
Yeah.
We have a baby who's refluxing all over the place. And then what? And then it's just a whole nother problem.
Right. And again, if you want to dig into this more, I encourage everyone to check out your Instagram and put your mom guilt out. Because I'll tell you what, in this particular subject, because my two were so different. I mean, they were both tiny little Polly Pockets, but the way they fed was so different. And watching your Instagram, like I said earlier, man, if I had just known, as my youngest had issues and we had to switch her formula and do all these things. But wow, if I had just laid her on her side and done a couple of other items that you touched
on. Yes. What would have been different? Yes.
Yeah. And it is. It's not just stressful for the mom. It's stressful for the baby.
Yes.
So now we're back into that parasympathetic mode. We're all stressed and walking around just all the time.
Yeah. And like hating feeding time. Like the countdown to when it's feeding time is like you can feel the anxiety building up in the family dynamic, right?
Right. Because you know what's going to happen when it's over. There's going to be spit up. There's going to be colic cries. And there's going to just be anxiety. And it's not fun.
Yeah. It's rough.
It is. But, and we'll also put a link for those that would like to get in contact with an IBCLC, that the national link where you can go find somebody in your area, because it's huge and it can make a huge difference for you. One of the things you talk about is cranial sacral therapy. And I know for those who haven't heard it in some of our other episodes, could you just briefly describe what it is and how it's beneficial to babies, especially the teeny ones?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a speech pathologist by like trade, I guess you would say. That's what my master's degree is in. But when I found cranial sacral therapy, when I became trained in that, it changed my whole career and the way that I help these babies. So craniosacral really is about energy, and that might sound very woo-woo, but I always like to encourage people, like on a very base level, is to just imagine the worst person in the world and how they physically make you feel. You don't even have to touch them, and the physical change your body goes through when you think of them, right? That's energy. Versus the person you love the most and how you relax and your whole body physically changes. Mm-hmm. And so whether you believe in energy or not, it's impacting you every single day, all day long. And so craniosacral therapy really is about me as like the therapist. And you go into the body and you're using their own rhythm. So I find their rhythm and their energy and how they're responding within their environment. And we sort of release where they're holding on to any kind of tension or trauma. Surprisingly, like 99% of the time, whenever I tell the parents, oh, I'm feeling most of their tension built up here, and I go to this one spot of the baby, it is always where the mom or the primary caregiver feels the most tension in their body. And I work with a pelvic floor physical therapist, and sometimes we do co-treatments, and I'll be working with baby, and I'll tell a parent at the end, this is thigh and body part I want you to focus on when we're looking at movement to help build safety in their body. And the pelvic floor therapist is, well, mom, this is the side and spot of your body that I want you to focus on. And the way that they match and mirror each other is just, it's like beautiful.
Wild. Yeah.
And yeah, I tell parents all the time who are like, well, where do I start? I was like, well, where do you feel the tension in your body the most? That's where I would start with your baby, because there's just so much correlation between the two. And so craniosacral is like the lightest touch ever. It's 5 grams of pressure. And so if you have a food scale, you could go put 5 grams, and it's just like the lightest touch. But what it's doing is transferring that safe and that energy, releasing tension. We're going into the body and finding where they're at and helping them move. You might also hear of cranial fascial therapy, and that is like a more movement-based, while craniosacral is using lots of energy and soft touch to go into the body. Fascial movement uses a lot of physical movement, right, to release fascial tension, because tension can be physical, so we can physically move it. You see, I know all those people have seen those videos where they're like rubbing on the adult's back and it turns really, really red, right? So they're releasing fascial adhesions. We're not doing that on babies.
Right.
So fascial adhesions can be physical, but they can also be energy and emotional based. And so I kind of use a combination of the two because I am a speech therapist and I do manual therapy, right? So you might go to a cranial sacral session and they're literally like just the lightest touch moving around on baby's body and releasing tension within. And then you might go to a therapist like speech or occupational or physical therapist who's also trained, and they might include some bigger movements with their treatment. So it can look a little different from provider to provider. But for babies, it's a beautiful thing because they're, again, like I said earlier, adults are so much more cognitive that they put all of that awareness and what they know on top of those emotions, whereas babies are not that way. And they are so open to being free and letting go. And I love treating babies because they tell me right away where they're hurting, and we go there and we can treat it and we can release it. We see progress. We continue that, right? For adults, goodness gracious, sometimes you got to like...
It's an uphill battle with us.
That's a lot of onion we're peeling back for.
Right.
And they have to be open and willing. And for babies, they already just are. So if you are struggling with attention patterns, like your baby always looks one way, or they're having constipation, or they're having feeding difficulties, for like we're getting the feeding assessment, right? But sometimes, unfortunately, those feeding assessments just aren't, they're not looking at the whole baby. And sometimes they're looking at, they watch baby eat and they're like, well, it looks okay, but they're not feeling baby. They're not getting in the mouth. They're not feeling their body. They're not building the connection with where the breakdown is. And so get the feeding assessment. They have to get in baby's mouth, right? You do a feeding assessment without getting in the mouth and feeling the muscles and learning what they're doing. And so many parents get feeding assessments that are just not, it's just unfortunate. And it's sad because as professionals, I'm like, get the assessment. And these poor parents are getting the assessment and it's just doing nothing.
You're listening to Airway First with today's guest,
Mallory Roberts.
You can find out more about the Children's Airway First Foundation and our mission to fix before six on our website at childrensairwayfirst.org. The CAF website offers tons of great resources for both parents and medical professionals. In our Parents Portal and Clinicians Corner areas, you can find educational and informational content, including videos, blogs, our recommended reading list, comprehensive medical research, podcasts, events, parent support, and several educational opportunities. Parents are also encouraged to join the Airway Huddle, our Facebook support group, which was created for parents of children with airway and sleep-related issues. You can access the Airway Huddle support group at facebook.com/groups/Airway Huddle. Are you a medical professional or a parent that is interested in being a guest on the show? Then shoot us a note via our contacts page on our website or send us an email directly at info@childrensairwayfirst.org. As a reminder, this podcast and the opinions expressed here are not a medical diagnosis. If you suspect your child might have an airway issue, contact your pediatric airway dentist or pediatrician. And now let's jump back into my interview with today's guest,
Mallory Roberts. hands off to the nurses that help us in the hospital right after we have the baby.
Yes.
But they aren't trained the same way.
Yes.
This group is. And that's why we want you to go to this group.
Yeah, for sure. And even like when you're looking at therapists, you know, out of school, I can treat feeding disorders as a speech pathologist, but the amount of training and extra training I did for infant feeding, it just is way different. And
yeah,
it's not the same. And so I always encourage parents, if you're calling like a therapist group, do you work specifically with infant feeding? Because you can work on feeding disorders, but a two-year-old feeding disorder is way different than a newborn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And before I went all the way around. I don't even remember what the question was.
No, you did. That was awesome. We covered a great deal, and that's awesome. But before we leave cranial facial or cranial sacral, rather, I just want parents to know I'm going to put a link in the bio, or the show notes, rather, that to Dr. Stephen Hall's book. He also was, I think, our second or third episode.
Okay.
If you haven't checked it out, he does a great job explaining it. And he's up in Seattle, and this is what he does. And it is, I'm saying this as somebody with a science degree, it's science back, and it's not complete woo-woo. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And worth exploring. Yeah, it's
for sure. Yes, life-changing for sure.
It really, really is. So, okay, now let's talk a little bit about nasal hygiene. Because especially as new moms, we all got that little sucker in your home kit, right?
Oh.
And I think we spent like 15 minutes on it during our prenatal classes, but there's so much more to it. So really, what is nasal hygiene and how does it relate to and why is it so important for oral development?
Yeah. You are meant to breathe through your nose only. We are not meant to be mouth breathers. The nose has certain systems in place, right, to filter air, to aid in your health. And so your chronic mouth breathers, when we're looking at upper respiratory infections and things like that, it matters. And so nasal hygiene is simply, it's like brushing your teeth. And sometimes they're like, well, I don't brush my infant's teeth. Well, you should. Like getting a little washcloth and wiping the gums down, I'm a proponent of that. And so the same goes for nasal hygiene. We should be doing that daily. You can, those little saline nose drops, right?
Yeah.
You drop them in. The big piece that people miss, though, is that we want baby to be swallowing those. We want it to be going down the whole airway tract.
So, yeah, it's got to go the whole way, yeah.
The whole way. And so when you drop those nose drops and then we suction it, it just defeated the whole purpose.
It needs to go all the way back.
It needs to go all the way back because that is a big space. And so we're dropping those drops. And if baby can be hanging off the edge of your leg, right? Just a little incline and you drop them and you just wait a couple seconds and you will see them swallow. It's like, it's really interesting thing to watch. And so
it's true because you don't think about there's a hole back there.
Uh-huh.
And it's somebody that gets scoped frequently. I'm used to it now, but the first time they go up and back and you're realizing, wait, you're in my throat. You came this way. It takes you a minute to go through biology and connect and realize you thought it was like this, but there's a hole back there.
It's a whole cavity. Yes.
Yeah. So just let those drops go all the way back because there is a lot of space back there.
Yes.
That you're just not getting.
Correct. That it's true. And your suction and on the other side of that, the sucker's not getting back there. And the sucker also, I mean, that's a lot of pressure in the nasal cavity. And so I tell parents, if you don't see snot and if you can't get it with your finger, don't use it because you're putting a lot of pressure in that space and it can cause inflammation into the tissues if you use it too much.
And it's scary.
And so, it's intense.
It's scary. Yeah. For a little person, you're kind of. It's unnerving for them.
And a lot of times they're doing the nose drops and then they get the sucker. And what babies are doing is they're linking those drops to the trauma that's about to happen with that sucker.
And so now we're tense
And then in all reality, like the drops itself are fine. They don't mind the drops. And so use the drops by themselves. Of course, the sucker is there when you need it, but it's not, most of the time it's not. For our babies with reflux,
when they are refluxing, it's going into that giant airway space, okay? And so I always encourage parents, when a baby refluxes or you hear them reflux, give them a little support in that airway and do a little nasal hygiene. Help them clear it out. As your kid gets older, like I teach my kids do their own drops now, but then move their head around, right? Because mm-hmm. that space is wide in there. Get that drop, let it slosh around in there, right?
Yep.
And then it can be really clearing up.
Basically gargling.
Yes.
Gargling through your nose, right?
Gargling your nose. Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Seen you talk about
I'm going to steal that.
Do it. It's all yours. And I've seen you talk about this, but I want to make sure you say it on here. Neti pots.
Uh-huh.
How are you feeling about a neti pot? I've just watched your face. I already know the answer, but let's talk about neti pots because we hear a lot about them.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty much like a suction device, right? Because it's only getting... Now, you see these videos where just so much knot comes out. Yes. And yeah. It's pretty intense. It's intense. My goal is to never put that much stress. And I want to keep this area safe, if that makes sense. They're intense. That's all I can say. I'm not going to tell you that you can't use it. And if you've been using them and you love them, I can't say stop.
Right.
There's a better way. I would say there's a better way. And in a very more non-invasive way. And that's a lot for me to say because people are like, well, what you do in the mouth is so invasive, right? And I'm like, so.
Yeah, but it's not traumatic. You're not in
it's,
there.
Yes, around, exactly.
Huge sounds and pressure, and it's different. Yeah.
It's the pressure that really bothers me. And I mean, of course, I've had it done to myself because I never do anything to my babies that I don't do to myself. That includes like what they drink and what they eat. Like I've tried all the formula because I want to know what their experience is, right? Which you can't really know because everybody's experience is different with everything. But in terms of like how it feels in your body, it's just so intense.
And I have to say, in all fairness, I think we've all tried the formula and the breast milk. So let's come out and admit it. Like, we've all done it. Right? Your first kid, you're curious. You're there. You're tired.
Yeah.
Like, let's see.
Let's just
it's
see.
Fine. And I tried a neti pot and I assumed it was because I'm just freakishly skittish about that stuff. I mean, this is an outie, right? Things
come
out. This is not an any hole. So I was already freaked out to start.
Yeah.
So in all fairness, I probably am not a good candidate, but that's not a good one for me. But
you put that psychological bad already on it.
Exactly. But the drops, it's fine.
Yes.
Drops are fine.
I will say too, though, spray can even be intense. Okay.
It can. And that took me a while to get used to, but now I'm okay with spray.
Okay.
But the netting.
Just to put that out there
for me.
For children, for babies, I would not do a spray. Goodness gracious.
My gosh.
They're so intense.
And they have to learn spray. That's hard to teach a tiny person.
Yes.
Right? That movement, that little dance you have to do, because otherwise it's just coming out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I think we've all experienced that as well, just watching it drain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's fun. I don't know. I mean, a lot of times people are like, if you do it on your baby and they're calm and they're fine with it, they keep doing it. That's my thoughts on it.
I'm right there with you. All right. So now let's talk about the ears.
Okay.
Because we know that the ears are going to impact the child, especially with their state of relaxation. And somehow you can ease digestion with this. But again, it's on your Instagram. That's why I knew to ask this. Let's talk about that so parents know what that looks like. And this is another tool they can have in their toolbox.
Okay. So the ears are, I love the ears. Okay. The ears don't get enough credit. And when we're looking at the ears, and like the spaces in the skull, right? They're connected to the throat too. And a lot of people don't know that. And so when I talk about feeding and the tongue and the ear connection, it's huge. There's literally the elevation of the back of the tongue is how you can drain the ear. There's a muscle responsible for that. And so when we're talking about a baby with low tongue posture and their never elevating the posterior tongue because of tension or because of a restriction, we're getting those chronic ear infections. Mm-hmm. And what I love about making this connection for people is because so often bottle feeding gets blamed for chronic ear infections when really right. babies moved to the bottle because they couldn't breastfeed. They couldn't breastfeed because they had oral deficits, right? Mm-hmm. Now they're getting the ear infections because they have oral deficits. That has nothing to do with them using the bottle, right?
Right. And that's just that if they're laying down, yes. give them a bottle, they get an ear infection.
And that, no, it's mind blowing for some. And it really helps build that connection between what happened right at the beginning and sort of how things can snowball into their own individual issues mm-hmm. when it's one big issue. Like it all goes back to what was happening with all baby in the beginning. Yes. Yep. In the mouth. Yep. And so with that connection, like with the tongue, right, and feeding and function of the ear, and you get like this connection to the jaw too, right? Like they're stacked on yep. top of each other. So if we're having tension being pulled here, when we're looking at babies with torticollis, imagine all the tension being pulled on one side. What is that doing to the function of the ear? So then why does that matter outside of ear infections? Well, then we're looking at the vagus nerve. And yep. the vagus nerve, we know, is stimulated with palate input, right? That's why the tongue needs to sit up there. But there's a branch of the vagus nerve that we can reach through the ears and input in the ears. And this is why this goes way back. Acupuncturists have been doing the ears for as long as the world has been here. Ears have always been there. They've always been a gateway into helping the body calm. And so getting in the ear, when I say get in the ear, we're not putting our finger in the ear, right? Your finger's never going in the ear. Nothing goes in the ear. Your Q-tips that you love, like those shouldn't even be going in the ear.
Again, this is an outie, not an innie. Yes. So there's nothing yes. in there. Yep.
And so when we're talking about getting in the ear, I'm talking about energy. I'm talking about placing movement there and moving. Just give it some movement. You will see how I've had adults, of course, every time I post something for babies, I love the adults who come back and say, oh my God, I did this on myself. You should absolutely do it on yourself. There is nothing I give you to do to your child that you shouldn't do to yourself first.
Yeah.
Because you absolutely should. I want you to be able to feel. I give face massage all the time. I want you to feel what it's doing before you do it to them. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so when you're doing the ears, if it's painful, that only tells me that there's tension somewhere in that space that needs to be resolved. Go lighter. You don't have, we're not going to pain here, right?
Right.
Movement shouldn't be painful. And you should be able to move your body without pain. And all parts of your body should move without pain. And when you move and there is discomfort, that's telling you, hey, pay attention to the spot over here because it's not optimal. And so I love working in the ears, and babies will melt when you move their ear. Adults will melt when you move their ears.
It's and soothing.
Because it's that
not
connection
gonna lie,
piece.
I've done it after some of your videos, because especially too, I used to have pain back here.
Yes.
Touch it. I couldn't touch it. I would just, I would jump.
Correct.
I can touch it now.
Uh-huh. And people will come back. Well, when I touch it, it hurts so bad. And I'm like, well, then you should sit in that space a bit, because it should not hurt. There is nothing that should hurt from touch.
I had that
like
for
you
years.
Should not touch
years.
Any part of your body.
Hair.
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. It's wild. It really is.
And so, I love the ears, and you just go start with the lightest touch ever, because again, babies are so responsive and they will tell you everything you need to know about them. And you could touch any part of their body. I encourage parents to lightly go across their baby's body, going down their spine. And if you see a twinge, don't ignore that. They are telling you something's there. Sit in that spot. Give it some movement. Go lighter if you need to go lighter. But movement is a response telling us that we need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, too, because they all have different touch point's not the right word. I get soothing spots.
Yes.
And it's funny to watch them change too. Because for example, when my youngest was little, I don't even know why. I was just messing with her feet one day and it's this kid turns to jello.
Yes.
And so I figured out, well, that's your spot. Well, now she doesn't like her feet touched, but it's, wait a minute. When you were a baby, it was like, you could instantly just, it wasn't the same for my first one. Her place was different. I mean, everybody's is.
Yeah.
And they are.
Because
and like
everybody's
you said,
different.
Just watch them. Yeah, watch them. They will tell you, this is it. This is what I like. This is what I don't like.
Yeah, the opposite too. You'll feel them sort of melt into that. Like you touch and they sort of just melt into it. And you're like, whoa. Okay,
this is where
you
I
like
you.
That. Yeah, exactly.
That's just the feet. And literally all I would have to do is just put my thumb, top of their foot here, the thumb on the bottom. I'm not even putting pressure. And that's all I would do. And she was just asleep. That was it. Yeah. She was done.
But no pressure, right? You're using cranial sacral therapy.
And I didn't even know.
You didn't even know it.
And it's funny doing these when we're talking about the spaces and how it's all connected. You remember when we were all in high school and you always had that one kid in class going, when will I ever use this? Parenting, my friend. This is when you're going to use your biology right here. Parenting, you had no idea.
You had no idea.
Right. All right. So now let's talk a little bit more about oral movements because you have on your Instagram, and the fact that I've mentioned this like 15 times should be a cue to parents. Please go. But you talk about oral movements or this oral plan.
Yeah.
Specifically around the wake up routine. So let's talk about what is this and what are the benefits?
So I like a wake up routine. Some people really hate that because I don't know. The wake up routine that I talk about is just to get awareness, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So when we've been sleeping, what do you do when you wake up? You move, you stretch your body, you yawn, right? That's to open up that jaw. You go, and then you go what? You brush your teeth, you eat, you start talking. Babies don't do that. And even as adults, like having an oral movement routine as like you go brush your teeth and then you learn some of these oral movements that are in the guide, parents have come back and been like, it's been life-changing. I didn't even know I had tension in my jaw. Until you start to release that tension and you feel better, right? And so for babies, all we're doing is providing them that movement to help function because these are all muscles. The tongue is a muscle. The cheek is a muscle. The lips are a muscle. And for any muscle in the body, movement helps function. It's that simple.
And your tongue, by the way, goes all the way down.
All the way back.
It's connected though all the way down so that
yeah.
And people
so
don't
your
realize
muscle
that, so.
It ends here, right? Like the muscle itself,
your fascia,
right? Which is this connective tissue that lays over your entire body. But they have fascial lines, and this one piece of interwebbed fascial tissue starts at the tongue and goes all the way down, goes through your diaphragm, through your stomach, right? Through your hips, down to your knees, into each toe, like down each leg into the toes.
Yeah.
So it separates and then goes down. And so that is one line, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about waking up, giving movement into that space will only help release,
you
can feel it everywhere. It's just a beautiful thing. And it's so easy to do. And once you get comfortable with it, like some parents are just like, I just don't feel comfortable putting my finger in it. It just feels so invasive for them. And I would say to that is like, one, do it on yourself, because I think that it will help you feel the differences. And I think that's important. But two, watch your baby. They will tell you if it's too invasive for them, right? Mm-hmm. And if they are telling you like, stop, then we need to pull back. We need to look at their movements. We need to make sure that they're not holding tension somewhere. Maybe they're telling us something,
Something's going on, yeah.
Yes. So if you're in the mouth, I love doing, like when my baby wakes up and we wake up and we go in, she's laughing and she's smiling and we're engaging and she's starting to move the tongue and you can see it wake up and you can see it. Okay, I'm ready to go. Right. Mm-hmm. Because what do we then do? They want to eat. And so I want to give them some movement, release some of that tension because they've been sleeping like this all night long. Right. So they're trying to open up that line. So let's help them open up that line all the way down to the toes. It's just I love it. And when I teach parents it, when they watch me do it, they're like, oh, I see it. And we're like, yes, it doesn't have to be this like scary. There's so much information about oral play and how it can be aversive and how it can just damage the baby. Well, then you're doing it wrong.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah, right.
Then that's all I can say, because it shouldn't be. And it's a way to directly impact how the tongue is functioning. It's a way to directly see where we need to focus. And if we need some support as a parent, do we need to bring them to someone to help them function, not just in feeding, because the tongue is responsible for, like I said, right, digestion. It's responsible for regulation. It's responsible for the way the palate and the face shapes. It's responsible for draining the ears. Like, it's got so much responsibility. Why would we not treat it with a little, some respect and give it some movement?
Right. And it's Dr. Claire Stacks. It all starts here. Everything you're doing,
everything
in your body starts here, and your health span that you're setting your child up for life.
Yes.
Here.
Yes. Why are we not engaging with it would be a better question. If it's so important, why do we ignore it?
Right. As we didn't know.
Yeah. 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 But also because people are telling you not to. Well, don't do that because they're going to, they're not going to want to eat, or they're going to be scared, or they're going to have oral aversion.
No. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's not going to happen. All right. So I will put a link to that on there, but I'm also going to put a link to your habit tracker.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for just a few minutes. You know, what is this and how is it?
Yeah, so I actually use it, and I created it because somebody was like, I just can't get it in a routine. There's just a rhythm. And I know that the oral play helps. Like when I do it, I see change in my baby, but I just can't get into a routine. And so habit stacking is really important for me. So I have 4 kids, 8 to 4 months old. It's chaos, and I totally get it. And so like habit stacking is how I get these things in. Like we do nasal hygiene, oral activities every single day with teeth brushing. That is what I have habit stacked it to. Everyone can agree that they brush their teeth, right? Nobody disagrees with that process. And so we all do it. So since we all do that, we're all in front of the mirror. We're always in the bathroom doing it. Let's habit stack it, meaning we're also going to have our nasal drops sitting next to the toothbrush. Okay. Each kid has their own little name on it, right? So they know which one is theirs. And then we're going to have this habit tracker. And as your kids get older, you're not in there with them brushing their teeth anymore, right? So my oldest is 8. He goes into the bathroom, he does his routine, and he's checking off his stretches and oral activities himself. And the 6-year-old is getting better at it. The 4-year-old and the infant, I'm in the bathroom in front of the mirror and we're doing it together. But you're in there with them brushing their teeth. So at 30 seconds, right? This is not meant to be a 30-minute activity. We are meant to be there, I mean, max maybe 3 minutes, right? So, well, 2 minutes brushing your teeth. So maybe 5. You do your nasal drops, it's 10 seconds. And you're, as they get better at the activities, it gets quicker. They can start doing it themselves and it gets easier. But when you have an infant, like we're sitting in the mirror and I'm doing her activity, I would say I do it for 60 seconds. It also depends on what she is, right? Because if she's a little overtired, I might just go in, do a little quick thing, and then we're leaving. The key is that we always are doing it, because that's how you build habit, one, but that's also how you build the expectation that this is what we do.
It's what you do.
Mm-hmm. We brush teeth, we do our nose, and we do our stretch, because this is how we keep our body healthy. And as they get older too, you can start talking to them about, well, why do we do these stretches, right? Because our tongue needs to sit on the top of our mouth and we need to be relaxed in that space because our brain needs to feel good so that we can get strong. And you can start talking to them about it. They are very smart.
Which is huge.
People.
Yes. And then because they're going to want to be a part of it. And it's so funny when I heard you talk about this the first time. And I think a lot of people do this, right? You try to relate to it. And I flash back to moments with my oldest, and when she was 2 and 3 and 4, and you don't realize, you know, I miss those moments every evening when we would go in together because it was just us. And she'd get on that stool and she's brushing her teeth and washing her face and we're talking. And you look, it's actually such a precious just little microcosm of your day.
Yes.
But she talked. So we could talk about things. And I'm thinking, wow, if I had known about all this, we could have been talking about these things because she was so relaxed and open.
Yes.
And it was not a big deal. And we're singing songs and
yes,
you make it enjoyable, then
yes,
they're going to respond to it. And then now they're 8, 9, 10 and they're doing it on their own.
Correct. Yeah. It's not we're holding them down and we're like putting our hands in their mouth.
You will do this because then they're not going to do it, right? So try to enjoy it. It's
five
minutes. Go do it.
Right? It's just, and then of course you're going to have nights where they're like, no, no.
Right.
Like, that's a toddler. I mean, a 15, 18 month old was like the worst age, goodness gracious, with their no, and they learn it and you're like, but then you come up with your strategies. Okay, well, we can, what song do you want to sing while we do our stretches? Mm-hmm. Or what number do you want to count to? Because they just want that little piece of control, right?
They
like we're
control.
Telling them we have to do this and this, but and they're just trying to pull some control. So give them some, mm-hmm. give them an option. And it's the point is like, well, we're
Let's
doing
get
it,
there.
But how can we make this where you are understanding the importance, but also not screening because that defeats the whole purpose.
Right. And then they're stressed and you're stressed and here we go again. Right. And everybody's got to go get cranial sacral. And it's just, it's big. It's a so at the end of every episode, I always hand it back to you, our guest, because you are the expert. And I ask for your final thought that you want to leave our parents with.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We talked about a lot of stuff.
We did. And by the way, and I'll say it again, we talked about this much and your Instagram is like this much. Please go check it out.
We talked about a lot of stuff. I guess I always just want to stress like the mouth is, it just doesn't, it's so important and it can really change your child's whole trajectory of their life. And that's not even like putting it mildly, everything, how they're regulated is so big, right? The tongue needs, I don't care what, who else someone is saying, but the tongue needs to be up on the palate space with them breathing through their nose.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, let's not become obsessive with it, right? So many parents are, they're going to hear this and they're going to say, well, my baby's a mouth breather. It's going to impact their whole life. Yes. But here's these strategies that we're going to do. We're going to start to implement these things. It's going to take time and that's okay.
Right.
We can only do what we can do and we can only do with what the information you have, right? So we're not going to spiral because that can happen. And we're going to take these little tidbits. We're going to start watching our babies more. We're going to start incorporating these things because now we are aware of the importance of the mouth and how it can impact their life.
Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest step to me.
Yeah.
That's the biggest hurdle.
Is the awareness part. It's like knowing, right?
Once you know it, and then you can either see it in your child and go, oh, mouth breather, got it.
Yeah,
or
got it.
Now understand it. And you look at your child and go, nope, this one's okay. Let's just build.
Yes.
The knowing and understanding, that's the biggest hurdle.
Yeah. And that, it, like, great. Now you have this information. I just, so many times parents are messaging me. My 8-month-old is, I just realized he's a mouth breather. He's been doing it his whole life. And it's just like going down this spiral of all these things that now it's clicking. Oh, this is why he couldn't do this. And this is why he couldn't do this.
Yeah.
And this is why he couldn't do this. And
every parent
I'm like,
will have
okay,
that moment.
First, it's okay. Like we can, we are where we are right now.
Right. You can't go back. Here's where we are. How do we move
and
forward?
And we can go forward and we can go forward slowly. And it's not going to be an overnight fix. It will not be an overnight fix.
No, that's the other thing. There's never an overnight fix for this.
No.
It is a process.
It's
no
a process.
No matter which treatment you go with.
Yes. You are training your body. You are unlearning their body to learn something new. And that's hard. That's hard. So, but there's things we're doing and we're doing the best we can and we love our children and my kids will still, like, they'll be watching TV. If you don't put your tongue where it's supposed to be.
Yep.
And they all have, like, devices. We call them devices in our family. And they're really just, if anybody's familiar with the Mayo Munchie.
I was about to say the Mayo Munchie. Yep.
And so they're dupes for the Mayo Munchie. They're just toothbrushes, those U-shaped toothbrushes I pop off. And I put those in between their teeth. And I was like, go get your device. Because sometimes as adults, we need reminders, right? Look how I'm sitting the whole time. Sit up, right?
I don't know how many times a day I catch myself doing
you
this.
You catch yourself, right?
more comfortable. Yeah.
Well, it's like your body goes into path of least resistance.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
And so it takes time, and it's okay that they need reminders, and it's okay that you go get in slumps, right? We'll just get right back up and we'll make it better. It's okay. That's my message.
It
is
okay.
Yeah.
Breathe.
Well, I can tell you it was an absolute delight to have you on. I'm so glad. I've been looking forward to this. So thank you for coming on and sharing so much. Really
appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thanks again to today's guest, Mallory Roberts, for being on the show, and to each of you for listening to today's episode. You can stay connected with the Children's Airway First Foundation by following us on Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe to the Airway First podcast on your favorite podcasting platform so you won't miss an upcoming episode. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for an upcoming show, shoot us a note via the contact page on our website, or send us an email directly at info@childrensairwayfirst.org. Today's episode was written and directed by Rebecca St. James, video editing and promotion by Ryan Drawn, and guest outreach by Christy Bochinkian. And finally, thanks to all the parents and medical professionals out there that are working hard to help make the lives of kids around the globe just a little bit better. Take care, stay safe, and happy breathing, everyone.